Board of Directors for the Orange County Water District for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019, and the time is 5:33 p.m. Welcome, everybody, and I'm going to ask Director Brandman to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will you all join me in the salute and pledge to our nation? Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to our flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that, sir. And Madam Secretary, if you'll please call roll.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Brandman.
Here.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Rowe.
Here.
Director Sarmiento.
Here.
Director Sheldon.
Here.
Director Ta.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Zara.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Great, thank you. And I did hear from Director Nguyen. She said she was not going to be able to join us tonight.
Oh.
And I understand that Director Ta is going to have to go back to a city, and he's been kind enough to join us, but he has a council meeting that's going on concurrently. So thank you for making it to that, to at least to the front end of this. Madam Secretary, or Mr. General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay, thank you. And I do have two requests to address the Board of Directors, and I'll go ahead and start with Ms. Sandra Jacobs with the Santa Margarita Water District. Ms. Jacobs, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. New opportunities bring new challenges, and that's why I'm here tonight, to embrace the challenge. Thank you, President Sarmiento and members of the board. My name is Sandra Jacobs, and I serve on the Santa Margarita Water District Board of Directors. I am also running for the Special District LAFCO seat that was recently vacated by my colleague, Charlie Wilson. I'm here to ask for your vote and your support tonight. LAFCO is including in their work plan spheres of influence, municipal services review, and work on annexation of county areas within cities. And these county areas in the future are going to largely be in South Orange County. Santa Margarita Water District has a long history of working together for the good of the region, and we understand what regional cooperation looks like. We have partnerships with Irvine Ranch Water District and surrounding agencies on the Baker Water Treatment Plant. We've built the Upper Chiquita Reservoir with several of our surrounding agencies, and the public-private partnership with Lake Mission Viejo and the City of Mission Viejo. And it's this kind of regional cooperation that's important from a LAFCO standpoint, because working together, we've created efficiencies in agencies that maximize our resources. And I will fight to be sure these are highlighted in the LAFCO MSRs. So here's my perspective. LAFCO's role is to encourage efficiencies in governance among all kinds of jurisdictions, particularly special districts. It's my view that their role does not extend into forcing consolidations or permitting hostile takeovers. As your special district representative on LAFCO, I would not support a forced consolidation or annexation. If agencies want to come together and have a plan or an idea that will better or improve local governance, I would be there to support my LAFCO colleagues. Now, I don't have 9 years of being a LAFCO alternate under my belt, as Director Fissler does. But what I can bring is our fresh ideas and a new outlook. I'm particularly interested in this role because in South Orange County, we have some 80 square miles of unincorporated territory and roughly 700,000 residents in communities that will be a major focus for LAFCO as they look at future governance. And I believe we need to have a South County voice on LAFCO to ensure that our interests and concerns are addressed. But this LAFCO seat is not reserved for South County. I understand that. Though historically, the county, the city, and the special district seats on LAFCO have been balanced between North and South County. I have 23 years of experience as a director for the Santa Margarita Water District. I've been involved in leadership at ISDOC, your independent special districts of Orange County, for almost 20 years. I'm currently your ISDOC president, and I represent you under CSDA, California Special Districts Association. In fact, I just flew back from Sacramento this afternoon from the CSDA conference, where we were talking with our legislators about special districts. There are lessons to be learned in light of the Paradise Irrigation District, and I plan to bring that knowledge to the LAFCO seat. You have my resume before you. It includes the various committees that I've served on. I also included in your package a letter of support from Supervisor Lisa Bartlett, our 5th District Supervisor. And the South County agencies are supporting my role for LAFCO as well. I'm also a private business owner, and between that and my years on the Water District, I do have a keen appreciation for the sustainability of budgets and costs and managing within our means. LAFCO just increased their budget, and I can assure you that any increase will receive my full scrutiny. So in conclusion, I just got off the Southwest Airlines flight, and they said over the speaker, we know you have a choice when you travel, so thanks for choosing to fly with us. I know you have a choice when it comes to your vote for the LAFCO seat, so I appreciate your consideration, and thank you for flying with Sandra.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs, and thank you for the indulgence, colleagues. I spoke with Ms. Jacobs that we'd go a little bit beyond normally the 3 minutes that's allowed for the speaker, and I told her we'd extend the same courtesy to Mr. Fissler or anybody else who's considering that LAFCO seat. So given that, I'll go ahead and call up Doug Reinhart. Mr. Reinhart, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. President and members of the board. I'm here to speak on behalf of Sandra. I've known her for a long time. We're colleagues together. We've worked on many items together. But I want to impress upon you the importance, in my opinion, of a South County director. In fact, I originally got on LAFCO back in the mid-90s just because of that reason, that there was so much representation in North County that South County felt like they didn't have any representatives. And I was elected from the El Toro Water District Board, and South County totally supported me under those conditions. South County is not totally supporting Sandra for the same reasons. When you look at LAFCO, two of the most important things that they're going to be doing over the next years involve South County, and that is getting rid of islands, and they have two of the most the largest islands at all, the Ladera Ranch area and now the Mission Viejo Ranch. And so those are issues that are going to have to be also South County governance. You know, are there going to be cities? How are the cities going to work? All of that's really important. It's going to take place over the next years as South County continues to develop. So I think it's extremely important. Sandra's experience, she understands the issues. She's involved in the community. She's, as she's mentioned, she's worked together with other districts. She is really the right person for it. And we, IRWD, passed a resolution in support of her. And so we're asking for your support, too. Thank you. She can have part of my 1 minute.
Thank you, sir. So it all comes out a wash. So thank you for that. It looks like those are all the speakers for this evening, and I'll move along to the consent calendar items. Colleagues, is there anything that you'd like to pull off the consent calendar?
I move approve.
So we have a motion, and Director Brandon.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Mr. President, with regard to item number one, cash disbursements, item related to Orange County Conservation Corps must declare an abstention, have a business relationship with them. West Coast Arborists, Levine Act contribution issue within the last year. Southern California Gas Company, SoCal Gas, same issue, Levine Act. Sagecrest Planning and Environmental, Levine Act within the last year. And also on the consent calendar, are we still doing item 13?
Well, that was my request.
It's a modified version of item 13, Director Bramman. It's, the recommendation at this point, given some of the issues that have been raised, is to only, there's three recommendations in item 13, and that is to only approve item 13, recommendation 2, the notice inviting bids, not the MND and the resolution.
taking out the MND?
Yes.
And that'll be considered at a later date?
Yes.
Okay. Then I can vote on item 13.
So okay. Then we're, Madam Secretary, what
as
are we
amended.
Talking about?
Yeah, we need to note that the approval, if it's going to be on, actually, we probably need to pull it off consent because we're modifying the item.
And I think we have a director that's going to be pulling it off in any event.
Right.
So
thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. And Director Rowe, I think you're up with on that item.
Yeah, I asked to remove 13 off. I have a comment. I have experience work for FEMA. If we're going to be getting FEMA funds from this, we want to make sure that we're in compliance with NEPA, which is different than CEQA, after federal laws and presidential executive orders that need to be evaluated by FEMA. It's a checklist. But for this situation, by us putting in an enlarged culvert at the formerly smaller culvert position, we may require be required to do a hydrology and hydraulic study.
Director Rowe, why don't we just go ahead and pull it off, and that way we can have further discussion on that. So
that was my comment.
Item 13 is taken off, and Director Sheldon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to pull item number 2 for discussion. Would that be this time?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I'd like to ask...
Why don't we let's move the balance
if we can.
Let's go ahead and take care of the balance of the with those amendments.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Colleagues, please vote.
That motion carries 9-0 with Director Nguyen absent, with the removal of items number 2 and 13 from the consent calendar, and a partial abstention on item number 1 by Director Brandon.
Thank you so much for that, and I guess we'll move on to item number 2, and I'll defer to Director Sheldon. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would, with sadness, talk about this item. I really have so appreciated and been honored and blessed having worked with Joe Cooperberg for so many years and benefited from his wisdom and his guidance. And just wanted to publicly say that and thank him for all the time he spent and the annoying phone calls from me that he answered. And just can't say enough respect I have for him in his position as just an outstanding attorney. And I wanted to say that and thank him for all the time and dedication he's given to the Orange County Water District.
Thank you for that. Director Green?
I agree. Can you imagine being an attorney for 10 people who are so different, keeping everything calm, everything going through? And I want to thank you not only for your wisdom and calmness, but ability to work with all of us so effectively and so well. And when you tell us no on something, explaining to us why. And we're almost sold on it most of the time. And I have enjoyed my association with you since I've been on this board. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for that. Any other directors? Director Bilodeau.
Just briefly, I have the distinction of being part of the effort to bring Joel back here in 2003, and I think it was one of the better things I did. So really appreciate all the guidance and help he's given me over the years.
Great. Thank you for that. And Joel, you know, from those comments and others that we've given you personally, I just want to say, you've been with the district from 1982 to 1993, and as Director Bilodeau said, you came back in 03. To the present. The time I've served, much shorter than some of the other some of my other fellow directors, you've certainly been not only capable of handling the subject matter, but there's a difference with knowing the subject matter and being able to explain it to lay people, right? And it's a difficult area of practice to begin with. So your demeanor has certainly helped, and I think you've instilled a sense of trust and camaraderie and friendship that I think is difficult for general counsel or folks that are advising us and counseling us. So thank you for that, and thank you for your service to us and for your service to the ratepayers in this district. You've really meant a lot to us. So, and you're a fellow Bruin, so I like you even more because of that. So don't stray too far. I think we're gonna have you up in a little while in any event, so you're not going too far, and I know you're not going to stray too far. But
No, we do have the resolution here also if the board, after they take action, would like to present it to them.
That would be great. Why don't we go ahead and, if there's no other comments, let's go ahead and present it to Mr. Cooperberg. Oh.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Colleagues, please vote.
That motion carries 9-0 with Director Nguyen absent.
Great. Thank you for that. Let's go.
Wow, unanimous.
Thank you all very much.
I have this. When I was older, I was a true one.
Thank you for that, and we'll be seeing Mr. Cooperberg in a few minutes, but before then, I think we have an item that we need to cover, which is item 13, and that is Director Rowe.
As I mentioned just a little bit ago, I think we need to get FEMA's Environmental Historic Preservation Group to approve our grant request. They may have done it in the past, but I think they may require a hydraulic and hydrology study. In order for them to finalize the approval. Like I said, it's kind of old, and there'll be more scrutiny perhaps by FEMA and the state. And we need to get FEMA, the representative. I think we need to have a congressional representative to kind of back us up and get them in sync with what we're doing, along with the governor's Office of Environmental or Emergency Services. Happy to talk about this further, and I also encourage that we do include the hazard mitigation that's proposed, because FEMA loves to have additional ways to protect infrastructure from further damage, and I support that.
Great. Thank you for those comments. Any additional comments or questions from the board? Any questions from staff or any response from staff? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve as described by the General Counsel.
So the motion to approve the recommendation would be just to approve staff recommendation number 2.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Colleagues, please vote.
Motion carries 8-0 with Director Brandon.
Great, thank you for that, and that takes us to the matters for consideration. Item number 31, documents for tax-exempt short-term obligations issuance and 2017B tax-exempt refunding obligations. I'll turn it over to staff.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This presentation was given at the Admin Finance Committee meeting. However, it is required also to be presented to the full board for its consideration. So Mr. Fick will be presenting to the board this evening. Randy.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, President Sarmiento, members of the board. As Mike said, this was presented at Admin Finance last Thursday. And this is a WIFIA loan structuring opportunity, and we're bringing the documents back to the board for their approval. So the district secured a WIFIA loan in July 2018 through the EPA for partial funding of the GRS final expansion project. The district can draw on the WIFIA loan up to $135 million, and the interest rate on the WIFIA loan is 3.06. WIFIA stands for Water Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, so it's a mouthful, but we call it WIFIA. WIFIA is a very flexible loan, and it allows the district to draw upon the WIFIA loan during construction and accrue interest at 3.06, or we can use a one-time draw on the WIFIA loan to refund interim notes that are used to fund the construction period. So currently, the interim funding offers the district an interest cost of about 1.875% for the construction period versus the WIFIA loan, which is 3.06. So here's kind of graphically our two options. Option number one, we can draw upon the WIFIA loan up to $135 million to fund the construction and accrue interest 3.06. Or option two, which is what we're proposing, is to issue interim obligations. That's the bidirectional arrow here. So the district will receive $135 million, pay the construction costs up to $135 million. The solid arrow there, back to the notes, that's the interest payments that we would make on these notes. And then at the completion of construction, we would take a one-time draw of $135 million on the WIFIA loan and then refund the obligations. So here's the quantitative analysis. So from the left there, the second column in, this is the WIFIA loan without the notes. So the total debt service, principal and interest, would be about $252.5 million. And then the two columns in from that, the WIFIA loan with the notes would be about $242.9 million, so less than the WIFIA loan to fund the $135 million of the project. And then we would have funds invested until they're spent on construction in an account earning interest, and we're projecting that to be about $3.2 million, which reduces the cost of the principal and interest on the loan. So the net cost is about $239 million, considerably less, about $12.8 million less than drawing upon the WIFIA loan during construction. So the benefits of the short-term obligations or the short-term notes is that the rates are lower than the WIFIA loan considerably. And then issuing the short-term tax-exempt obligations to fund up to $135 million of the construction in today's dollars saves about $3.2 million versus drawing on the WIFIA loan. Additionally, since rates have dropped recently, the tax-exempt market has shown a decrease, and there's an opportunity to refund a portion of the 2017B taxable COPs, and that refunding would save about $7.7 million of outstanding debt, would save about $608,000 cash flow and about $459,000 in today's dollars. Also doing this refunding with the interim notes saves on the cost of issuance to refund these obligations. So the official statement, district disclosure document, is a document that provides a description of the 2019 both interim and refunding obligations, the sources of repayment, and then risk factors and other material facts about the district. So the preliminary official statement is distributed by the underwriters to the potential investors, and it doesn't include any pricing on the 2019 obligations because they haven't priced or sold yet. Then the final official statement is the same as the preliminary official statement. It just now has the pricing information on the obligations for 2019. And then the official statement should include all material information about the obligations. So the documents that are for you tonight for this issuance is the resolution, which approves the form of proposed documentation and authorizes staff to complete the financing under certain parameters. Also, the TUS agreement, which governs the flow of funds, the 2019 obligation terms, interest rates, maturities, and the district covenants for the benefits of the owners of the obligations. The installment purchase agreement establishes the specific terms and conditions to provide the installment payments for paying the 2019 obligations, a continuing disclosure certificate, which the district covenants to periodically provide certain key credit information to the market, and then the purchase agreement, which governs purchase of the 2019 obligations by Goldman Sachs, our underwriter. So with that, the recommendation is to adopt a resolution authorizing execution and delivery of the trust agreement, purchase contract, installment purchase agreement, continuing disclosure certificate, and the preliminary official statement in support of the 2019 interim obligations and the 2019 refunding obligations, issuance to refund certain 2017B revenue refunding bonds not to exceed $155 million, including fees. And with that, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you for that, Mr. Fick, and I'll go ahead and bring it back to the board. Colleagues, any questions or comments? I know, Director Ta.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a motion from Director Ta, a second from Director Rowe. Colleagues, please vote.
Motion carries 9-0 with Director Nguyen absent.
Great. Thank you. Moving along to the next item, item 32, which is titled Board Member Roles and Responsibilities Workshop. So this is a presentation that we're going to have Mr. Cooperberg address us on with the general manager's consent and support. And I want to thank the directors here for making this more of an interactive maybe presentation, and to the extent that this board has had quite a few new directors within the past year and the last few months even. We thought this would be a timely exercise to kind of talk about some of the responsibilities and some of the roles we all have here, both as staff and directors, and and basically having a conversation, because I know Director Zara is very new. I know myself and Director Brandman rotated back in after a little while, and Director Ta, Director Nguyen, and obviously Director Rowe as well. So I think this is the first time that this board has had this much of a new injection of faces and new directors. So yeah, I think it's always important for us to kind of visit these topics, and to the extent that we could keep Mr. Cooperberg here for a little while longer, we thought this would be a good assignment for him. But he's going to talk to us, and I want to especially thank our more seasoned colleagues who've been here for a while to hopefully give us some guidance and some discussion, because you all have the history, unlike the rest of us, to maybe see what's important and what types of topics that we'd like to glean from this, and what counsel and thoughts you could share with some of us who are maybe some of the newer directors. So thank you for that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Cooperberg.
Thank you, President Sarmiento, members of the board. I can't help but note the irony that you'll hear more of me tonight as a retired general counsel than you probably heard in many months when I was sitting up at the front desk. As President Sarmiento mentioned, this is going to be a little different than most of the agenda items you get, such as the one you just had. This isn't going to be a discussion of what the district should do or how the district should do something. Rather, we're going to focus on what the board and what individual directors should be doing and the best way that they can do that. The president just pointed out, there's been a lot of change on the board recently. For a long time, and Director Bilodeau can attest to it, the board membership was very stable. I can recall several years ago talking with a director who said he'd been on the board for 5 years and was still being treated like a rookie. That's obviously different now. I mean, in the last year or so, you've had four or five new members. Almost half of the board's composition is new, and while some of you as new members did serve previously on the board, You haven't served with all of the same members at the same time. And really, whenever a new member comes on the board changes. The dynamics of the board change, the interactions between directors. So I think that's one of the reasons why President Sarmiento asked me to give this presentation. It's really a presentation that I've done in a somewhat different format that takes half a day, so I'm going to try and distill it. So if you get bored, appreciate that it could go a lot longer, and it isn't. But I'd like to do it, and it's really got two purposes. For new directors, it's an opportunity to maybe give some more thought to the structure of OCWD as an organization, not so much as a district, but as a corporate organization, and how you work within that organization. And for all directors, it's a chance to understand what you might be able to do to serve your role better and how you can interact with your colleagues better. So the things I'm going to cover tonight are pretty simple. I'm going to talk about the relationship between the board as an entity, individual directors who comprise the board, and staff, and then focus on the roles and responsibilities of each of you individually as directors. And by the way, feel free to interrupt, ask questions, challenge at any time. It's much more interesting than listening to me talk for a period of time. So what I'd like to do is start off by talking about the relationship of the board to the rest of the district. And it seems to me the easiest way to do that is to pull out the organization chart that was part of your budget packet last month. As you can see, we've got a separation of powers. It's kind of the classic separation of powers that you see in all governmental agencies. We have a governing body that's made up of a part-time policy-making entity, not a management entity, but a policy-making entity. And I would distinguish that because when you have cities that have strong mayors, like Los Angeles or San Francisco, they work in a very different structure where they've got an elected official who acts both as a policy leader and as a manager. The classic example in California for most cities and for all water agencies is to have the separation of powers between a part-time policy-making entity and a full-time professional staff. And each have very distinct roles. The second thing to point out is that from the board's perspective, you have a relatively short span of control. You only have four direct hires. You have the general manager, general counsel, CFO, and the secretary. So you hire and fire four people. The district staff is, 210 some odd people? It's a very large staff. You don't have direct control over all of the rest of those folks. Those people report to the general manager. So the board focuses on policy, not management. The board has very few people to manage, per se, just four. Now, by contrast, the staff carries out all the rest of it under the leadership of the general manager. And individual directors work on the policy level. Individual directors, by the way, have no power in and of themselves. I don't mean to insult any of you, but your only power exists as a member of the board when you can get five other board members to agree with you at an open public meeting.
Don't I know it?
Okay. There haven't been that many divided votes. So the general manager is the CEO, and as the CEO, he commands all of the rest of the staff. The staff works for the district through the general manager. Staff does not work for the board of directors other than the four people that are listed up there. No one works for an individual director. So it's a very different relationship than you might have with, say, a private corporation or other entities, but it's a fairly typical organization if you come from a city or you've worked with other special districts. So with that, what's the board's role? The board's role, as I said, is to set policy, vision, strategic goals for the district. It is not management. And as I see it, the board's policy role really covers three or four main areas. First, water and groundwater issues, which is the reason why the district was created. Replenishment issues. Yeah. Should you buy another spreading basin? How much money do we want to spend with the Corps of Engineers on Prado Dam as a water storage area? What do we want to do in terms of expansion of GWRS? All core district issues dealing with water and groundwater. You also deal with groundwater management issues, most notably every April when you adopt the BPP, the BEA, production limitations, and the rest. You are establishing groundwater management policy by setting price incentives and price disincentives that will affect how much people pump and thus how much groundwater remains in the basin. And you also do long-term planning. We don't see this very often, but every 4 or 5 years the board's asked to look at and approve a groundwater management plan, an urban water management plan. More recently, SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act documents. Those are longer-looking, strategic, water-related planning documents. So that's the first planning area that you work on. The second planning area that you work on, or policy area that you work on, is financial. When you set the replenishment assessment and the additional replenishment assessment, you're determining what the financing for the district should be. When you approve the budget, you are establishing the financial plan for the district for the next year. And then the third area is what I call internal or organizational issues. When you establish compensation rates for employees after bargaining or through other actions, you're establishing policy on how the employees are going to be compensated. Employee benefits, the same thing. And you also establish policy with regard to how you operate among yourselves. The board has a policy document, which is a collection of all the board policies, that are the sort of rules that you've established for yourselves. We'll talk in a few minutes about per diems and expenses. That's part of it. You also establish policy when you do things like fill a vacancy. And when you adopt and change your rules of order for how the meetings are conducted. So one area, again, is of the policy making is establishing the policy. The second part, which is the flip side of it, is the oversight part, making sure that the policy that you've adopted is being implemented by asking for regular reports from staff, making sure that the assets that you're responsible for, the district finances, are being handled appropriately. That's why you approve and review the warrants. That's why you review and approve investment decisions. That's why you go over carefully issues like financing of projects, like we had in the preceding agenda item. So those are all things that you do in an oversight capacity. The last area, from my point of view, that's the board's responsibility is the supervision and the support of the general manager. Again, one of the four reports directly to the board, the key reporting person in terms of carrying out the board's activities. So part of your responsibility is to supervise the general manager, make sure that your understanding of the policy that you've adopted is what the general manager understands and that he's implementing it the way you want, and then to provide him assistance and support in carrying out and executing your policy decisions.
Joel, could I interrupt you there just a moment? Because I think you've given us a lot to think about. So going back to sort of the org chart and looking at our direct hires and our direct appointments for us, and I guess the uniqueness of this board that we have 7 directly elected members versus 3 appointed members that represent the cities of Santa Ana, Anaheim, and Fullerton. So the roles are the same as directors that we have, even though we arrive at this board differently. 7 of us, have to go out and win an election to be here, and the other 3 of us get appointed by our respective councils. So there's no distinction amongst the 10 of us once we're seated, with the exception of maybe having to deal with some issues that may involve a city or a project in one of our cities. Sometimes we have to wear different hats. We're members of councils that make land use decisions, and then we have decisions as board members on whether or not a project is worthy of our support. So I know you'll probably get to that later on. But I guess going back to this, what I wanted to make sure is I know somebody who serves on a city, we normally go through our city manager as we contact others in the organization. In other words, if we want to talk to a planning director about a project, we don't go directly to the planning director. We ask the city manager to facilitate a conversation or give consent so we can go ahead and do that. But I know we're sometimes very informal. We get to know our staff here really well, as we do in our respective cities. You know, I know it's a fuzzy line. It's probably gray, and you and I probably see that. We become so familiar that, you know, sometimes we'll just go and maybe, you know, talk to somebody that that isn't the general manager and go directly to that staff person or that director because we know them so well. But what's that line, I guess? What's the bright line rule on that? Because we also could get ourselves into problems or complications if we do that in a way that's not appropriate, correct?
Okay, thank you. Again, I think what we're talking about now is this line between policymaking and management. And as a policymaker, when you have a question, when you want something from staff, you should go through the general manager. The general manager is responsible at your direction for managing all of the district resources, including personnel. And if, you know, just to take a worst-case scenario, if each of you as a director each asked Roy Herndon to do a major project, then Roy would never get the things done that Mike has asked him to do, which is what Mike understands that the board as a totality has directed him to implement. So you create problems like that. You also create a dual master problem. In other words, does Roy, in that example, does he report to the general manager? Does he report to Director Sarmiento? Does he report to another director? Who's he responsible for? So certainly, you know, a best practice, even more than a best practice, requests, direction, things like that should be processed through the general manager. All staff issues should be worked through the general manager. Now, it may happen that in most cases, Mike will say, you know, that's a good question. Feel free to, you know, call Roy and work it out. And, you know, Mike will oftentimes then tell Roy, you know, look out for a question from, Director Green regarding some issue. But that way, the general manager knows that you're going to be contacting staff, knows, say, not to dump a lot more work on Roy because he knows that Roy's going to be getting a question from a couple of directors, and so he can manage the staff better. And again, you also then keep everything going through a single conduit, which again, General Motors, a member of the board of directors of General Motors doesn't call up the vice president of sales. He works through the CEO. And so that's the same model we want to follow here. Now, informally, you're right. It oftentimes happens that practices develop, particularly on smaller items that don't consume a lot of time or energy, that a director will go directly to a staff person. In other words, let's say a director reviews an agenda item that I'll pick on Jason, that Jason prepared, and they don't understand something. Now, they should ask the general manager the question, but they might run into Jason at a committee meeting and say, hey, you know, I saw you had that in that agenda report, you had some comment about something or other. Can you explain that to me? Or, you know, that doesn't seem right to me. Those are relatively minor. I mean, I guess if you have to breach that wall between policy and management, that's not terribly harmful. And so that's what you see in most agencies is questions on relatively minor issues that don't require staff to expend any considerable time or effort or create any real work product, those are generally accepted as just going to happen in the ordinary course. But again, they're exceptions to the rule that issues relating to staff work, or what you need from staff, should be processed through the general manager rather than directly. I don't know if that responded or not.
Yes, and probably not a good idea for me to pick on any of our special counsel and tell them, look, I've got a different legal theory. Do you mind filing this motion? Because I think it's a better idea than what your legal path would be. Right?
I would appreciate that. But I should say that, you know, where that rule doesn't hold is with the four direct reports. I mean, you know, not so much special counsel, but general counsel reports directly to you. So you should feel free, if you have a question, to direct that directly to general counsel or to the CFO or to the secretary. Now, the CFO and the secretary sort of wear two hats because they are they are appointees of the board of directors, but they also work with and through the general manager. And so, you know, I would say that the general counsel is a little bit different. And I can tell you as general counsel that Over the course of several decades, there have been a number of members of the board who have been lawyers, and I have appreciated the fact that, at least not publicly, they haven't disagreed with me. So, you know, we may have discussed things privately, but I appreciate the fact that when you tell me I'm wrong, you do it in the hallway, not when the mics are open. So,
thank you for
appreciate
that.
So, we talked about the board's role. What's the role of an individual director? As I said before, an individual director doesn't have any power in and of himself or herself with respect to policy making or district management. But a director does have power by being an active member of the board. So by getting involved in policy issues, understanding them, taking a position, speaking out at the meetings, and then voting, you're part of that team, and you're becoming an active part of that team. The second role that I think directors individually have is an ambassador role. With outside agencies like SAWPA, Sand District, the county, with local, state, and federal officials and legislators, and with third parties throughout the district, you represent the district. As an individual director, you represent the district in explaining and communicating what the district's policy decisions are, what the district's mission is, what the district is doing, and in some cases advocating on behalf of the district, whether it's in Washington, Sacramento, or in Orange County, for things that the district wants. Last, as individual directors, you have your own kind of private political role to communicate with your stakeholders. So as the president pointed out, we have an unusual board. We have both elected and appointed directors. Elected directors have, you know, their stakeholders, their constituents, the community groups, the people that got the directors elected. For appointed officials, you've got your city councils that you report back to. You talk with your public works departments, etc. And you keep them informed because they're the ones who appointed you. But also, and I think President Sarmiento alluded to, the three of you who are appointed directors wear two hats, and those two hats don't always comfortably fit at the same time. Most of the time, you're probably the governmental hat that you're wearing is probably your city hat. I mean, I imagine that the city work takes up more time than the water district. Particularly because you all come from large cities. But when you're at the district, you're wearing the district hat, and legally your primary allegiance is as a district director, even though you're appointed by a city. And where that comes into play is relatively infrequent, but situations such as a contract, let's say there's a contract between OCWD and the city of Santa Ana on mid-basin injection wells. The director representing Santa Ana really needs to look out first and foremost for the interests of the district. He can also be concerned about the interests of the city, but those can't be paramount. Those issues don't come up very often. I know we did have the issue several months ago, sale of property when at one time it was being considered to be sold to a city, and that director understood the conflict and felt uncomfortable about the conflict because he was both listening to discussions as a director, but also knowing he'd be hearing those discussions as a council member. So as a appointed director, recognize that you've got that challenge, and when it comes up, you should feel free to talk to the general counsel, talk to the general manager on how you may be able to resolve it if you can't feel comfortably that you've figured out a resolution to it.
Joel, let me go ahead and call on Director Green. I think she has a question.
Sure. Yeah. Can you kind of define for me, there's that fine line when you go to a meeting or another agency or whatever, and you're speaking. And sometimes we feel very strongly about something, but that's not how our agency has voted as far as, or maybe we don't even know how our agency. How do you just refrain from saying anything in those instances? Is that the line that you're at?
You know, I think it depends on the meeting regarding how you'd handle that. if you are at a meeting as a representative of OCWD, let's say you're the SAWPA commissioner, and an issue comes up that you feel you need to speak to, I think you have to be careful speaking in that case, particularly careful speaking in that case, if OCWD has not taken a policy position or if your personal position differs from that of OCWD. I mean, really, I think part of the role of a director is to enunciate and be an ambassador for the decisions of the district, even if they're decisions you don't agree with. So, for example, if you disagreed with, say, some policy action that the board gave on SAWPA, and you're the SAWPA commissioner, you have an obligation to your other directors and to the board to help implement that, even though you may not think that's the best way to go. You have the right to try to change your colleagues' minds at the next board meeting, but until then, if the board set policy, you really have an obligation to try and carry it out. And what so I think that, you know, if the board hasn't taken... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, finish.
If the board has not taken a policy position, you know, sometimes it's inferable what the board's position might be. Sometimes you can just say, you know, I don't know what the... You know, our board hasn't considered that yet. I personally believe as follows, and I think this is what we ought to do. And I'm going to recommend this to our board as our policy position. So I think it's probably the issue comes up where it's most critical, I think, where you're formally representing the district. Now, in most cases, you're not in that capacity. Most cases, you're in front of a community group. You're making a presentation to a city council or another water agency. You're meeting with producers. I still think it's important on major issues. If you're expressing your personal opinion and not the board's policy position, to say that. That being said, you're free to express your own personal opinion. You just don't want to let people have the impression that your own personal opinion is the board's policy if the board hasn't acted on it.
I guess I'm thinking of instances when we show up at a public meeting, whatever, and you're introduced or you're known to be from Orange County Water District and you speak out on an issue, it would be inferred that that would be the district's stand when it isn't at all. How do you
Again, I think you do that just by clarifying that it's not the district's stand. So you get up and say, you know, I'd like to speak against, you know, agenda item 15 on your agenda. I am a director at Orange County Water District. While the district hasn't formally taken a policy position on this, I personally believe, and I think it's consistent with the other, you know, like with what the district does, that you ought to be voting no rather than yes, or something like that. I think you can easily sort of explain that it's your own personal opinion, your own personal position, when the district hasn't taken a position. It also gives you an opportunity to think about talking with the general manager when the meeting's over in the next day or two about whether the district should be taking a policy position on that. You know, call Mike up and say, hey, you know, I was at this meeting and I spoke on this and I realized we've never taken a position. And what do you think about us advocating one way or the other on it?
Okay. Thanks.
So anyway, those are all board and director issues. Staff's role is very different. You know, part-time policymaking board, full-time professional staff. Staff's role is to recommend policy actions to you, whether it's borrow, you know, with an insignificant sum, what was it, $155 million, something like that, you know, or approve a contract, things like that. Staff will make those recommendations to you. Once you take the policy decision and you make the policy decision, staff then implements. So you've approved that financing. Randy will oversee a team of consultants in making sure that we actually get all those dollar bills in our treasury so that we can spend it on a project. And when you approve a contract, then the district makes sure that contract is executed and it's implemented, and whatever is built or produced or what report is going to be prepared will happen. And then staff reports back to you on the progress on that so that you know, and that helps you in your oversight capacity. Now, a lot of the things that staff does are things that you haven't talked about for years. So, for example, staff members here are working on the Green Acres Project and the seawater intrusion barrier. They may not have been in front of you for decision for many years, but the board, different members, but the board made policy decisions regarding those issues years or decades ago, and until those policy decisions are changed, staff is implementing that policy decision. And that's why it's good at budget time and other times, if you're not familiar with projects, to ask about them, because it may be that projects that seemed important a decade or two ago, a board member may want to think about whether that's the best allocation of money now. And, you know, obviously give the general manager a heads up so he can be prepared for it, but those are oftentimes discussions that are good to have. So those are the roles of the different groups, the board, the individual directors, and staff. I want to spend just a few minutes covering the other part of the discussion that the president asked me to cover, which are directors' responsibilities. Now, it goes without saying, you know, as a director of OCWD, you're a public official, you're a governmental officer, and that carries with it responsibilities to your fellow board members, to your stakeholders, whether it's your constituents or to your appointing agency, and it carries a responsibility to also comply with all the legal requirements, and as you know, there are a lot of legal requirements. So what do I see as the duties of an individual board member? I think the one that comes up the most, you know what's happening at the meeting. Be prepared for the meeting. Go through the agenda items, review them. If you have questions, ask the general manager, and independently think about the policy recommendation that's being brought to you. Does it make sense to you? Is it something you think the district should be doing? You think it's the best allocation of resources and the best direction by the district to go forward with? And then once you do that, you are in a better position to discuss that with your colleagues on the board and to, with you know, full information and knowledge, vote on the policy action. Once you've done that, as an individual director, you have an obligation, I believe, to support the decision of the board, even if it isn't exactly what you voted for. You might have voted against something, but if the board's going forward with it, you know, you create all sorts of problems, and you've seen it with other agencies, and it's reported. I mean, I suppose in one sense, maybe the most graphic is this little altercation that occurred out in Indian Wells among a couple of council members over the weekend. But, you know, you don't want to be undermining or taking actions adverse to a policy action of the board of directors. Even if you can't overtly support it, you don't want to attack it. The second item that we talked about is work all the staff issues through the general manager. Again, there are some gray areas, real small things, but you know, if you need information, go through the general manager. That way he can make sure that the staff people can help you out, that they're not overworked on other issues. He can manage the resources, and he's in the loop on it. If you think that the district ought to be doing something and preparing recommendations, again, work that through the staff. Don't work it through individual or work with the general manager, not individual staff members. Don't put a staff member in an uncomfortable position where he doesn't know who his master is. Again, the staff members see themselves as reporting through the general manager, and we want to maintain that relationship. And as part of that, bear in mind, you know, that it's full-time professional staff. We need to treat staff respectfully and professionally. So, you know, if you have a disagreement with staff, don't yell at them. You know, you can yell at the general manager and say, you know, I have a problem with your staff member. You know, I thought he was rude to a member of the public yesterday, or, you know, he didn't prepare materials for me or a letter or something. But, you know, don't discuss that with the staff members or their immediate superiors. One thing we don't think about very much, but there's a power relationship issue. For staff members, particularly those that are not the senior management staff members, they look at you as directors as very powerful, and you're intimidating to them. And we don't want to create fear in the staff ranks, you know, whenever a director walks down the hall, that, oh my God, it's a director. Is he going to ask me to do something? Is he going to yell at me? Whatever. So work those issues through the general manager. It works a lot better. Also, remember that you need to treat staff members professionally. You know, you want to stay away from things that aren't district-related. I mean, you know, there have been some stories. I couldn't think of one recently, but I remember there was one. I can't remember the agency. Several years ago, you had issues of, I think it was city council members getting romantically involved with staff members. That's a no-no. You know, you don't want to have personal relationships with staff members. You don't want to get involved in political, religious-related issues with staff members. You know, they're here to do a job on behalf of the district. Let them do their job. Talk with them about those issues through the general manager. But, you know, debate the presidential politics with your friends at the local bar. It's probably a better practice. Similar issues are with the public. You know, we're fortunate that even with really contentious issues, when the public comes in and they're impassioned, they're generally pretty polite. Those of you who have served on city councils know that public input at a city council meeting can be a little bit more dynamic, shall we say. You know, there's a reason why cities oftentimes have armed policemen at council meetings. So, you know, we're fortunate that the types of issues... they had them in Irvine when I was city attorney there, too, so it's not... It's all sorts of places. You know, we're fortunate that the types of issues that come up don't create quite the level of hostility and vitriol that, say, you know, putting in a 15-story building next to somebody's single-family house might, or some of the other issues that city council members deal with. But still, we need to make sure we treat the public professionally and courteously at all time. And bear in mind, you know, as part of that ambassadorship issue, that directors are the public face of the district in many cases. When you go out to speak to a Kiwanis Club or city council or, you know, some other group, you are representing the district. And to the extent that you can do that in a polite way, respectfully, and I have no reason to think that any of you don't do that, but it comes up with other agencies sometimes, you're reflecting the district well to those people. Another area where I think you've got directors' responsibilities to follow the legal requirements. It's an obvious one, the Brown Act. Most of the Brown Act issues are dealt with by staff and general counsel. The one thing directors need to watch out for is an inadvertent creation of a serial meeting or an informal meeting by talking with too many of your colleagues about the same subject. So I think you're all pretty sensitive to that, but I just spot that. The other main legal issues are conflict of interest issues. You're all probably painfully familiar with that. And Public Records Act issues. And the main one you need to worry about there, you've probably read enough about it and heard about it, is the whole issue of private email or text accounts and sending communications in that way, dealing with district issues. Bear in mind those are public records, and they are disclosable. The other legal issue is that, you know, the legislature in its wisdom has mandated that you take now two different types of training every 2 years, AB 1234, the governmental ethics, which covers the Brown Act and conflict and Political Reform Act, among other things, and then more recently harassment prevention training. That's also 2 hours of training every 2 years, and that has to be taken within 6 months of first assuming office. So those are classes that, you know, those are programs that, you know, are offered through AQUA, CSDA. Our office can do them for you if you need it, but you do need to make sure you get those done.
Can I ask a question? On the harassment prevention training, I was told somewhere, and I don't remember, that usually it's every 2 years, but that now it had to have been from 2019 forward, that if it was 2018, it is not.
I'll turn it over to Jeremy, because I'm not familiar with that.
Kind of an anomaly in the statute, the way they did it. So 2019, everyone, all supervisors are required, even if you took in 2018, in 2019 you're required to take the training. It's a one-time kind of anomalous way they wrote the statute.
Okay.
It may be that there were two different requirements. There was a requirement for harassment training for supervisors, and there was some debate whether or not elected officials were supervisors. My position was, since you supervise at least four people directly, you are. But separately, the legislature enacted harassment prevention training applicable to elected officials specifically. And that may create the dichotomy about, you know, when you took it and whether the new one does it. And the requirements are a little bit different as to what the contents of the training are. So it's probably worth, you know, getting the refresher if you have to.
Safest bet is just to take in 2019.
So the last area where I think the board has a responsibility is to be familiar with the board's policies. And we do have a policy manual. Janice can circulate it to everyone if you don't have it already. I think the ones that come up the most and the ones I'll talk about, because I've been talking too long already, per diem issues and reimbursable expenses. For per diems, make sure you know what are the authorized meetings for which you can put in for per diems. Reimbursable expenses, understand what the rules are there. There's extensive rules that are part of state law as well as board policy. These mostly come up with meals, accommodation, sometimes travel. And realize that for all of this, you need to document for expenses. You obviously have to have the receipts and everything else. But also remember that the documentation is public record, so that where you stayed, how much you spent on something is available to the public to look at. In discussing this in advance with President Sarmiento, I realized that your policies may be a little bit, it might not hurt to review them and look at possible updates. There are certain concepts that probably haven't been incorporated into them, and certain things that we can learn from other agencies. And some of you may have seen there were some stories about West Basin Municipal Water District in the last couple of months where people put in for per diems for five-minute meetings. Now, we all know that, board members, even when you have a short meeting, you still have to review the agenda, you have to drive to the meeting, then go back home. So you're putting in a lot more time than the actual meeting time. But nonetheless, you may want to think about whether certain types of meetings, if they only last a few minutes, and I can't think that we have any of those, but that whether those should be compensable by per diems. You may want to think about how to deal with issues like phone calls or in-person meetings from one director to another, one director to a staff member. Should those be per diem meetings or not? I don't believe we address that in our policy, and so there may be some inconsistency in how directors are handling that. And there may be some political perception issues about whether you should do it. I will tell you that one of my agencies, I won't mention the name of it, several years ago, they paid per diems for directors to go to the funeral of a director who passed away. And that got in the newspapers. So it didn't look really good. So those are the kinds of sensitivities you want to look out for.
So, Joel, let me interrupt you, because I know Director Green has a comment and a question. What I wanted to talk to you about is we're on notice, right, that we know that there are those, whether it's a community group, whether it's maybe a ratepayer who goes through and could do a PRA request, and these are all public documents, so they can gather our per diem sheets and just basically scour them. And they are, I think, as you mentioned, sometimes misleading. I don't think I've ever been at a meeting that was less than half an hour here, but nonetheless, we are compensated for each of those meetings, and somebody could say you're getting paid this much for attending a very short meeting. I don't want to add a bunch of columns to the to our already complicated sort of log sheet, but I do think it's important that we understand that it isn't just attending the meeting. So to your point, travel's involved, preparations involved in anticipation of that meeting, understanding the material, it's part of being prepared. But I think we should be ready in the event that there is a request that's made, that we do have some ability to go ahead and explain, look, this is either a short meeting or there is more involved to a meeting than just that. The second one is what you were talking about is, there are different ways. There are, technology's made it different. We can FaceTime in, or we can, sync into a meeting or conference call in. Are those different or the same than somebody attending a meeting physically here, right? So do you get compensated the same? So I think there are some things that we could come back, Mr. General Manager, on just some housekeeping, updating. I think those rules and policies are fairly dated, where there might be things that we might want to update and just address. Probably not many, but it's always good, because I think the public is always interested and will scrutinize entries that we make. And, you know, by the time we're trying to figure it out, then we're explaining we're losing, right? We're sort of losing that trust and confidence that this agency has worked so hard to, you know, to have. So in any event, those were just my comments on maybe, you know, next steps and going going on in the future. But Director Green and then Director Brandman.
Yeah, I do have a question. I think I know most of the authorized meetings because they're committee meetings or that we've been assigned to or that we go to. But I'm not sure. Sometimes we go to meetings in Sacramento or D.C. or different places. Are those authorized? Are our AQUA meetings authorized? And I really, are we supposed to call the general manager and ask? I've never thought about this before. And phone calls, I didn't know phone call. I know when I had eye surgery, I called in and I had to take pictures of putting up the notice and my address and everything. Are those the phone calls or just any phone calls?
The law recognizes that you can teleconference a board meeting, and I think you could probably also by extension do it with a committee meeting. And I think the law would hold that those meetings are compensable.
Okay.
Again, we're talking about board and committee. The law doesn't the per diem rules cover both attendance at meetings and service on behalf of the district or on behalf of the board.
Okay.
I forget the language
okay.
in the act. And so things like Sacramento, AQUA, those really fall under service on behalf of the district, not the meetings. And so those get to be a little vague. And that's why it's good to try and spell out to the extent that you can. I believe our policy may have some language about approval by the board president or something like that, you know, where it's not otherwise clear. But you don't want to put the board president in a position of having to either say no to you or make decisions that he doesn't feel comfortable with. And it's better to have the rules clear and defensible at the outset.
Okay.
So, you know, issues like that, I mean, you know, part of it is just keeping up with technology. I mean, when the rules were developed, Skyping was still new. I mean, the rules for teleconferencing really deal with audio. You know, nobody had ever heard of Uber and Lyft. You know, it's one issue to, you know, take Uber or Lyft. You know, you go to a conference or something instead of a taxi. That seems pretty straightforward. You know, does it extend to other things? You know, where, let's say your car is in the shop. I mean, you know, do you rent a car? What happens? Who pays for that? I mean, there's an analogy. You know, there's a rule that state law that says that you can choose between, if you're going a long distance, between mileage or airfare. But if you're going to choose mileage, it can't be more than what the standard coach airfare is. So if you wanted to drive your own car up to Sacramento for a meeting, you could do that. But if you're putting in it, was it 55 or 60 cents a mile, that can't be more than whatever Southwest is charging, you know, on a given Monday morning or something for a flight to Sacramento. And so, you know, maybe you approach, you know, the rideshare issues, let's say if your car's in the shop, like that. The technology issues, I think you can work with the teleconferencing rules and say video meetings are, you know, should be covered, but you really have to figure then what kinds of meetings. Do we want to encourage directors to be calling in all the time as opposed to, you know, being there and being part of the discussions in person? Those are really policy issues you have to grapple with. And I would say at the end of the day, what you want to do is make sure that you have rules that are clear, that cover all of the instances that you think you need, and that are defensible, so that you don't either create inconsistencies or create the opportunity for people to say that, you know, you're making them up as you go.
So speaking of rules, I know Director Brandman has a question or comment, but I think we may have lost quorum.
I noticed that. I thought I was going to drive you all out at some point.
Right. I know. So. Do we want to?
Come on back. It's almost over.
We're almost done.
There's no voting going to be taking place right now. So,
Yeah, it was provide the information.
Got it.
No actions to take.
Okay. Director Brandman. Just wanting to err on the side of caution, as always.
Okay. So, in the interest of full disclosure, I have been making use of Uber and Lyft to committee meetings. When I first served on the board in 2016, trying to get to committee meetings for me at 8 o'clock in the morning, especially water issues, the very next day after a council meeting that went till 1:30 in the morning, that just wasn't going to happen. And so I would end up arriving at 8:20 or 8:25, and then, you know, some blogger would, you know, beat the crap out of me. And it's like, well, what do you want me to do? I did the best I could. So come 2 years later, here I am, and this wonderful technology has matured, and it's cost-effective, and I think it's within the bounds of what is acceptably expensible. And so did it as kind of a pilot, and the president and the general manager's consent, and it seems to be working. I can get to the meetings on time. Well, as on time as I can get for Jordan. But it also dawned on me as far as an equity issue, because we are entering probably a new era where people are going to be using their cars much less. So what happens if, you know, someday, and who knows, it might be someday soon, we have a board member who just doesn't have a car. And their way of getting here is through rideshare. How do we expense that? How do we deal with that? So I posit that question. I kind of fell into that. And I really do appreciate my colleagues' indulgence for letting me make use of this. And yes, at every available opportunity, I only do one way, because I hitch a ride with my colleague from Fullerton back up Euclid. He's very understanding.
I think that's I think that's a private transaction between the two of you.
No. But the reason why I actually requested to speak is, and I think I'm the only, because Dana's not here. My first experience in elective politics was on the school board, and maybe it's because of the authoritative or authoritarian nature of how a school district works. If you're a trustee, the only person you're talking to is a superintendent. You ain't talking to anybody else. And if you start talking to a principal or a director, and somehow something gets crosswise, you're gonna get a talking to by that superintendent, and it ain't gonna be a nice talking to. And so when I first got to council, and I found out all these different, well, you could talk this. Like, but none of these people work for me. None of them were accountable to me. And so the first city manager I had, yes, there were several. He would say, well, you can go talk to this person. You can go talk to this person. No, I'm just going to talk to you as we get to know each other, because you're the only person that actually works for me. You're the only person who's accountable per the charter to me and my colleagues. So you're doing your agency, your jurisdiction, a favor by following those rules. And so when I first got here, what was one of the, when you and I were first getting to know each other, was that one of the first things I said? It's like, I'm only going to be talking to you unless you delegate me elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, you know, everything has just worked great for our relationship and getting what Anaheim needs. So anyway, it all derived from coming from school board, because at school board there is no gray area. It is black and white. You're talking to the superintendent and you're not talking to anybody else at your own peril. And I live in peril.
and I can just to follow up on that, you know, different cities have different practices. I think if you talk to most city managers, they would prefer that people follow the traditional model, that all the staff discussions go through the city manager or the general manager or the CEO. Some cities have developed practices, and some city managers just find that that's not the political fight that they want to take on. But if you sit down with them with a beer and you ask them what they really think, they'll tell you that they'll give you lots of war stories about what happens when people go directly to lower level staff people. The other thing on the Uber and the Lyft, I don't want anybody to think I'm suggesting that the board should either say everybody should take Uber and Lyft or nobody should take Uber and Lyft. I'm suggesting it's an example of something that you ought to think about and establish as a policy so that 5 years from now nobody can say that somebody's doing something improper. Once you've adopted it as a legislative policy and it doesn't conflict with any state or federal law, you're good to go. And so it's better to address these issues and have the rules, again, clear and defensible. And then you can worry about the business of the district and not these kinds of things. So, anyway, I've gone over the time that I had allotted to myself, which I know has been painfully long for everyone to begin with. So I'd be happy to answer any of the questions or let you get on with the rest of the agenda.
Director Green?
I think one suggestion I have is maybe we do look at our policy. I don't even know what they are, if you want to know the truth. I know as president, people would, I was supposed to okay or not okay some expense. And so I think maybe it would be good for us to look at the policies and then make decisions and make sure that they're clear and defensible. And then all of us will know what we're doing, and there won't be any questions, and nobody's in an uncomfortable position. So I don't know. I don't even know where those are.
Janice can get you a copy if you'd like. She's got the policy manuals.
Okay. I know the one that I helped do, but I don't know any of the others. Are there more? Is there more?
There's a few policies with regards to sense reimbursement, like those to the board.
Perfect. And attendance and anything else. In fact, maybe all of the policies should go to the board members. There are enough of us that are new that it probably wouldn't be too such a bad thing for all of us to review.
Okay, and we can bring them forward possibly to the next Admin Finance Committee meeting and just maybe try to highlight some of the ones that we feel need to have tightened up or start having a dialogue with the board as to if what changes need to be done.
Great.
So we'll do that.
Any other comments or questions?
Director? Being the newest member, I actually got the policy book and read it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thank God.
But you should be up here giving your report.
We're not going to ask any of the other directors that same question.
Yes. But definitely there were some questions I had and some vague areas. Which I decided, from my point, is not to go there, since they're vague. Let's leave it there. So I'm trying to sort of be very clear on how I conduct my business here. But definitely, I would be very open to maybe for discussion on how to clarify some of those vague areas.
As Joel mentioned, it's been a long time since we've looked at the policies, and so it is time to look at them again and make any revisions. That
when they were enacted, I think there wasn't Uber and Lyft.
So you're right.
Now we do have them.
You're absolutely right. Yep. And Skype. iPhones.
Yeah, so I think seeing no other comments, what I wanted to do, I just wanted to thank my colleagues for allowing us to entertain the subject matter and Joel for obviously presenting it well. I think you're so familiar with the board, you're so familiar with, again, some of our personalities and some of the issues, some of the specific issues that have come before you. And really for me, this is helpful because what I wanted to do is just remind us of what our defined roles are, both, set by policy, set by state and federal law, but also sometimes because we feel so you know, and for me, I am kind of guilty of this. I feel like, you know, we're kind of a big family, right, an extended family. So it is very easy for me to maybe, you know, reach out to somebody directly, you know, whether it's at the city, because we, you know, I've been on the council now for 12 years in my city, and I, you know, have new you know, directors and executives that know less about the city and the organization than I do. So it's funny because, you know, I kind of sometimes walk them through some of the issues. But we do have to understand that as directors, as policymakers, there's a relationship that's very difficult to understand, I think, that we are there's a perception that there is this authority and power, and sometimes it is very intimidating to a person who's, you know, who we're dealing with, who has a career here, right? Because for most of us, we're here in a transitory position. We'll be, you know, transitioned out. Somebody else will come back and fill our role. But to staff, this is their profession. This is their career. This is their livelihood. So to the extent we can smooth out and define those roles better, respect those roles, and sometimes, you know, as we say it sort of in simple terms, kind of stay in our lanes, right? You know, we deal with policy, we deal with certain things that are very specific, and, you know, I know in Santa Ana, I mean, we've had some pretty egregious cases where, you know, it's very public. We've had a city manager have a relationship with one of our planning staff. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, things like that happen. And it happens sometimes innocently, and then it blows up, and, you know, it costs people's their livelihood and their, you know, their reputations. So, you know, I do always, you know, want to bring it back to us, because when I am signing off on per diems and on expense reports, I certainly feel like everybody is entering everything in good faith, and I don't want to put anybody in a bad position where we're signing off on something that will be subject to scrutiny and then looked upon later as being flawed, right? Or we're trying to somehow, duck something or create a problem. So that's my concern, and that was a reason for me bringing this here. And finally, just because we do have such great staff here, right? And out of respect to them, I want to make sure that we as directors understand, and some of us who come from really boisterous, other policy-making bodies, this to me has always been sort of a very, you know, a haven, sort of a calm place where we're talking about really substantive issues. last night we had a meeting that went till 1:30 in the morning, so I'm sensitive to what Director Brandman said. It just happened last night.
That used to be me.
Yeah. And so, you know, so when you come here, we're talking about, you know, things that we can really benefit some of our ratepayers and our folks within our service area. But we do have a really special place. And I always want to say, you know, to the staff and to all the executives here, you created an environment that I think is very welcoming. And to those that are directly elected here, you know, they're at a great place. And for those of us who are here on just a short-term basis as appointed, look, it really is a breath of fresh air, because I've sat on other agencies. I've been to TCA. I've been to, you know, OCFA. And it's a very different environment. And so, so let's try to continue preserving that, because we do have something special here. And I want to thank you all for just allowing us to present this issue. And thank you, Joel, for doing a great job presenting it. Director Green, I think you had
Just very quickly, since we have some new directors and we have other people that may be out of compliance or will be soon on sexual harassment prevention, I am not. I went to mine. But the person who gave it was very, very good. And from our JPI, a attorney, it was very good. One of the few I really enjoyed. I felt I learned a lot. I did a lot. And I wonder, since there are so many of us that really need the training and we could bring in staff or anybody else, would it be possible to ask him what it would cost to come down and do that training?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, there's not too many attorneys that I know I enjoy being in the company of, with the exception of Joel and Jeremy. So, in any event, but
this guy was really funny, too. He was really good.
So I want to thank especially, you know, Director Yeo, Director Green, Director Bilodeau for sort of, you know, they've been on this board for some time, so I know it's sometimes painful to revisit some of these things, but thank you all for indulging us, and we look to you guys for guidance as well on this. So moving along to item number 33, this is the Environmental Working Group commentary on drinking water quality, and I think,
you know,
Director Green,
I was going to say most of us here already heard this presentation. I put it on for Jason to do it because just so everybody got to hear it. But we were all there.
Yeah.
So maybe we could skip this and bring it back. It's
well, I don't know. I'm sure Jason would be heartbroken.
But I can say I can be brief. I can just kind of maybe talk about what we have done since the committee. I won't run through the whole history of it. And the pleasure board, I'd be happy to do that. So yeah, we spoke about this at Water Issues. This is basically the Environmental Working Group article that created some headlines last month with the estimate that, what, I think 15,000 lifetime cancer cases in across the state of California, you know, 39 million, could be attributable to drinking water. And so we have some questions about the methodology I was using that. Here's what we've done since we met last week at the direction of the committee. We've added some water quality information to the website, working with the public affairs staff. We've added the testing requirements that for the producers face for their drinking water systems, as well as what we do here for GWRS. Have a little section that describes the difference between enforceable drinking water standards and what goes into forming those versus some of the more sort of just health guidelines and goals that are that certain states and certain organizations put out, try to draw that distinction so people understand that. And then we have a brief acknowledgement of and summary of the Environmental Working Group article there, just acknowledging it. So this is the link here. So this is on our website now. This information is posted for folks to take a look at. And we've done separately, we've reached out to the Water Research Foundation and the authors of the 2014 study that essentially Environmental Working Group has taken and we think kind of adapted or used to come up with their conclusions. And so we've been speaking with them. We've asked them to kind of assess what EWG has done here, and they are still working on that, I'm told. I spoke with someone with Water Research Foundation today. They're working with that original study's authors, I think coming up with essentially a response to EWG. And so once we get that information from them, from those risk assessment and public health experts that worked on that original study, we will update the item on the website there, and if appropriate, bring that information back to the board. So, yeah, that concludes my report.
Yeah, that is good stuff. And I know it's helpful because it's funny. Last night, Nabil Sabah presented before a city council talking about Well 38 being taken down. And so we were talking about PFAS. And so this issue came up, and you know we were able to direct folks to be able to go to our website and get more information. So very helpful and very
timely. Yeah, I think our staff has done a great job. We're ahead of the PFAS situation. We have this working group with the producers. We met this morning. We're keeping them up to date, and it really is working out quite well, I think.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. And next is SAPA Activities, Director Bilodeau.
I attended the SAPA meeting yesterday. We had a quite lengthy closed session discussion on personnel matters that I can't get into. We are very close in executing the agreement, which will guarantee us 30% of the water bond monies going forward. There's just a little clarification that needs to take place, but I think that agreement is pretty much in place at this point.
Good for
so
you.
So it's a big victory for us.
Great.
Good for
you. Good job. Thank you for that, Director Bilodeau. Seeing no further comments on that, the monthly water resources report.
Information is contained in the packet.
Thank you for that. And committee conference and meeting reports. Director Green for ComLedge and Water Issues Committee.
It's in the packet.
Great. And since Director Ta isn't here for retirement and admin finance, I believe that information is reflected in tonight's packet as well. Any reports on committees, conferences, meetings attended at district expense? Director Rowe.
Yes, I did attend the Aqua Conference in Monterey. It was a wonderful conference. I got to participate in a lot of meetings, heard a lot of panel discussions. Mike was good. I had opportunity to meet with, I always forget, is it Marty Ralph or Ralph Marty?
Dr. Marty Ralph.
Marty Ralph. We had a couple of lunches together and chatted about it. We have a lot of mutual acquaintances at Scripps. And he really made me feel happy to know that he's getting some support from NOAA and Air Force and getting planes to look at the atmospheric rivers off the Pacific. And I support any effort that he has to do that for us to better operate the Prado with the forecast inform reservoir operations. That work is going to be important to be able to better predict that and support the San Diego Super Computer Center, which they hopefully maintain and he can have a lot of access to. One thing that was kind of interesting at the AQUA conference was the discussion about all this Sigma reports that are being done in the valley, and they're predicting that about 1 million acres of area, agricultural land will be retired because they require 2.5 million acre feet of water. They're pumping too much from what the annual balance is. Something to look forward to. They're trying to see what they can do. 1 million acres out of agriculture is going to be a big blow to the economy. And I think that's some of the highlights that I had. But I got to meet a lot of new people and get reacquainted with some of the old people that I knew. Janine Jones is doing great. I'm happy that she's a brilliant lady with DWR. Oh, and the other thing is I did contact the joint, the JPIA. One of the issues I have, I feel compelled to be empowered to talk about is the Army Corps of Engineers Rehabilitation Inspection Program for water control facilities, and I think the JPIA will be well served to try to address that that program, get people who have those facilities engaged to the Corps of Engineers. It's basically annual inspections, reporting, making sure everything's in compliance. If we have a disaster and they're not in compliance, then they're going to basically pay for those damages themselves. FEMA will not pay for them if they don't show that they have annual maintenance records. So it's good to get the Corps involved. And if we have facilities here in Orange County, we should do that. Fred Bachmiller is with MESA. He just got elected to the Board of Directors for JPIA. I'm going to try to get him to try to address that issue with JPIA a little more directly.
Excellent. Thank you, Director Rowe. Director Green?
Yes, I'll follow up with JPIA real quickly on that and then give a very short report. On JPIA, none of us will have increases in our insurance except for HMO, and that they're in a 2 or 3 year cycle, but it's pretty pretty reasonable. The rest of us will not. They are looking at the catastrophic coverage, and they've come through on the wildfires and the dams and everything. So JPIA is right there. They actually have coverage. How long that will last, I don't know, but right now we have it, and so I think we're blessed. We heard from Joaquin Esteville, Chair of State Water Resources Control Board, Jared Bloomfield, the Secretary of Cal EPA, and Wade Crowfoot, the Secretary of Natural Resources. They were all really smart, very funny, and very strong proponents of the water tax, which has now changed going forward. Mike, you were excellent on the panel. That panel on atmospheric rivers was absolutely excellent. On our Region 10 committee at 7:45 in the morning, we had all of our reports, which were very, very good. People kept them short, succinct, to the point as a rule. There were couple of exceptions. Our Region 10 event will be July 30th at Arroyo Tribuco Golf Club in Mission Viejo, and it will be on DACA and how that's going to affect us. So we're working at that on that right now. That's it.
Great. Thank you for that, Director Green. Director Zara?
Yes. I also went to AQUA, and it was my first time, and it was just absolutely eye-opening. While here we focus on some of the local issues, it was great to see a sort of a bird's-eye view of what's happening in water in California. And my specific interest was disadvantaged communities, and I was really interested in the panel discussions that happened about on that. What was interesting to me is that most of the discussion is happening about what's going on in the Central Valley, and this not enough, I think, talk about what's happening in the urban areas. And I think this is something for us in Orange County, which we're a wealthy county, so we're not even on the radar for that. Yet we've got many disadvantaged communities within our cities, Anaheim, Santa Ana, and Fulton. And so that is something I think that we need to address moving forward in other panels or discussions that we participate in. So I'd love to see more of that. The other interesting panel was on cannabis that I attended. It was a discussion on how cannabis and water sort of affect each other. And so the interesting thing about that, I won't get into the details, but it is not a product that consumes water a lot. So it's actually one of the least consuming products out there compared to hay, which is the most consuming. But it is one of the highest consuming products, plants of energy, if it's built, if especially on the inside growing facility. So that's that was a little interesting thing there. And finally, we did, you know, the biggest topic du jour then was the tax, water tax, and I got to hear a lot about that and some heated arguments in some panels. But I got a chance to briefly talk with Secretary Crowfoot, and I shared with him my thought on that, which I think he took quite seriously. I know Mike was there, and thank you for that introduction. We brought this idea that I don't think anybody's been thinking about it, which is when you're taxing folks, even though there's an exemption for low-income families, most low-income families actually live in apartments, so they're not going to be even affected by that exemption. They're not qualifying because it's the landlord that actually is going to be hit with that, and he's not exempt, or she. And so what's happening, though, we don't have actually a mechanism for controlling the pass-through between the landlord and the renter. Right now, there is no laws to monitor or regulate that. So, and I've seen it in our neighborhoods where the landlord is now billing renters for water, and it is not a pass-through. They're actually adding, so they're making profit off of this, and some are just padding it into the rent. So it's actually going to, it's an excuse to increase rent now. And so this is actually going to create more burden on low-income families who are struggling already with housing. So there's a housing effect on housing and on rent, which we're trying to solve. So we followed up with a letter on that one. So, and I know the new package for the water solution from the Senate, even though it doesn't, it kind of took tax away, but it's still there. It's kind of just postponed it. So I think it's still important that we continue these discussions and advocate on the dire effects of this tax, whether it's off the table or not. Yeah. So and that is it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, Director Czar. And I also attended AQUA, and I think I'd echo everything that was said up here. I don't think I have anything new to add, except for the fact that that issue of disadvantaged communities was really, sort of on everybody's mind. And it was great to hear, because I think that, there is a nexus between, people's quality of life, their ability to, live at a certain standard, mm-hmm. and make sure that everybody has access, to clean and safe water. So I'm glad everybody's talking about it. I know we had a chance to speak with Director Czara, and we thought maybe what we do is, a lot of the focus was on the Central Valley, and I think there are pockets, even though we are a wealthy, sometimes donor county when it comes to things, but there are pockets of places in our county and our service area where we have some of the lowest AMI in the state. And so, we really do need to think that way. And I think when we, when folks in Sacramento see us, they think, well, you know, look, the county's fine. They don't need any assistance or any help. But, you know, that sometimes can't be further from the truth. For
as a follow-up on that, I think we have to have discussions amongst ourselves about what type of projects we can put together to get the funding, because that's a key also, I think. So having that dialogue, I think, is very important. Once we submit a project, then it probably has a very good likelihood of being funded.
That's an excellent point. Last thing, I didn't get a chance to see your panel discussion, Mike. You got bumped because you sent me to another
I did.
Panel just
I did.
For that
yes,
very
I did the same with Director Zara.
But I'm sure you did great from what I think Director Rowe must have caught you. In any event.
Couldn't have criticized. Excellent. It really is.
Anything further from the...
one more thing. Just to follow up, Mike, on what you suggested is I would love to see us have a study session of some sort or a discussion on disadvantaged communities within our county and see what solutions or programs or, that we can actually come up with that we can advocate for at the state level or even local.
It's a great idea.
Thank you for that. And on verbal reports, I guess what I just said kind of bled into my report. The only last thing was the discussion again last night that we had at our city council meeting about Well 38 being taken offline and the fact that those are maybe conversations that some of our cities will be impacted by. So in any event, that's my report. Mr. General Manager, your
report. Just to follow up on the PFAS, President Sarmiento, what we're discussing also is, and we had the discussion after the meeting with the group today, is making a very concerted effort to get to the elected officials, both in particularly in the State Assembly and the State Senate, to make them aware of the issue so that it doesn't come as a surprise to them. We talked about a lot of the agencies are going to have to, if they're above the notification level, notify the governing body. That may be the Super County Board of Supervisors. So it would be good to meet with the supervisors or their chiefs of staff to give them a fair warning that there may be letters coming to them from various cities saying that they're exceeding these notification levels, so they have an understanding of what that is and what it really means. So we're moving forward on that front. I was obviously at Aqua as well. I participated, as Director Green said, on the Atmospheric River panel. I also participated on a WIFIA panel, and I think that was the one I was steering everyone away from. That you hear about WIFIA here, you don't have to go to Monterey to hear me talk about WIFIA. But it was a very good panel also. And then one of the other things, we were able to meet prior to the federal presentation on federal affairs with General Colleton, who's the district commander, the division commander, a former colonel at the time in L.A. at the district level. So we were able to make introductions with Director Green and Zara with the general. And then finally also, I did have a conversation with Dave Van Dorp of the Corps regarding Prado Dam. And I know Director Zara and others have inquired just exactly what is going on with Prado Dam, particularly in light of the LA Times article, which kind of overblew everything. The bottom line is it's no big issue. What I would do, rather than try to explain it now, is develop a small report and send it out to all the directors so that everyone has the information. And then if there's any follow-up questions, free to contact me further.
So, I empathize with you on the LA Times overblowing thing.
I was downplaying it.
Our worst land.
Thank you for that, Mr. General Manager. That'll be welcomed by all of us in the event that we get asked those questions. I know we do, and it's great to have a reference. Any directors' reports tonight? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to the General Counsel to go ahead and take us into recess.
Yes, directors, we have a closed session with departing General Counsel Cooperberg, Counsel Emeritus, to discuss existing litigation, Government Code Section 54956.9A, one case, Irvine Ranch Water District versus Orange County Water District, and we can now repair to closed session.
Thank you.